पुत्रोऽथ तेजस्वी विहारन् बालखोर्बकाय रजनाघं प्रपितं थातं श्रुत्वा तत्रेदमाब्रवीत्।
The sage had a son who was very powerful. Being a Brahman's son, while he was playing with his inexperienced boys, he heard of his father's distress, which was occasioned by the king. Then and there the boy spoke as follows. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Due to Maharaj Parikshit's good government, even a boy of tender age who was playing with other inexperienced boys could become as powerful as a qualified Brahmin. This boy was known as Sringi, and he achieved good training in Brahmacharya by his father so that he could be as powerful as a Brahmin, even at that age. But because the age of Kali was seeking an opportunity to spoil the cultural heritage of the four orders of life, the inexperienced boy gave a chance for the age of Kali to enter into the field of Vedic culture. Hatred of the lower orders of life began from this Brahmin boy under the influence of Kali. And thus cultural life began to dwindle day after day. The first victim of Brahminical injustice was Maharaj Parikshit, and thus the protection given by the king against the onslaught of Kali was slackened. Maharaj Parikshit's good government, the four varnas and four ashrams were being carefully followed throughout society, and therefore people actually exhibited the real qualities of saintly people, and they were given the benefits of living in harmony with the laws of nature and the will of God. The Varnashram system, when followed according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, is very pleasing to Lord Vishnu. And by following the Varnashram system in a mood of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, everyone together can progress toward the ultimate goal of life, which is liberation from all separate materialistic attachments and unalloyed devotion to the Lord of our heart. So this is the duty of a God-conscious king, a Raja Rishi, is to make sure that everyone is making spiritual progress, that no one is being exploited, through the process of keeping everyone within their varna and ashram, according to the qualitative instructions that are given. whether one is a Brahman, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, a Shudra, a Brahmachari, Grihast, Vanaprast, or Sannyasi, everyone can find great material prosperity and spiritual prosperity if they simply follow their particular duties under the instruction of superior personalities. Srila Prabhupada, in his preaching, very seriously stressed the necessity of understanding this Varnashram system. In fact, Srila Prabhupada again and again, continuously explained that the name of the religion of this great land of Bharatvarsha is not Hinduism. The word Hindu is a name that just came about within the last few hundred years. It is found nowhere in the Vedas, but rather the enemies of Vedic culture coming from Afghanistan, the Mughals who were actually trying to destroy the Vedic civilization. Because the border, more or less, between those following the Vedic civilization and the people who were strictly following the Mughal rule was the Sindhu Valley, where the Sindhu River, still it is today in Pakistan. So they call the people of the Vedic culture the Sindhus, because they were east of the Sindhu River. And later on, just the way of pronouncing things gradually deteriorated, and it became Hindu. So Hindu is a word that the Muslims gave to the people following the Vedic culture, and not at all a very flattering word, because they hated the Hindus or the Sindhus. So of course today the religion is named after that, Hinduism, which people are very proud to be Hindus, and according to their idea of what a Hindu is, yes, we are also Hindus because we are following the Vedic culture, but that is not the real name of our religion. Srila Prabhupada explained, the name of the religion of the Vedic culture is Varnashram Dharma. And he repeatedly told us that, not Hindu, Varnashram Dharma. This is what all the Vedas declare to be the name of religion. Varnashram Dharma is what the Vedas teach. How to follow the laws of God by acting according to your particular occupational and spiritual role in society, and living according to the particular qualities and duties of that varna and ashram. In fact, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Rai the path of perfection, the goal of life, Ramananda Rai's first reply was the most basic elementary explanation of the Vedic literatures. And he was correct. The basis, he said, by following your particular varna and ashram according to the varna-ashram dharma system, in devotion to the Lord, you will achieve the perfection of Krishna consciousness. You will please Krishna. And then he quoted from Vishnu Purana. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to understand higher and higher and higher principles. But that is the basic principle. But today, people, the general public even sometimes politicians, they want to kick out the Varnashram system. That means what Hinduism actually is, they want to kick it out in the name of Hinduism. The basic principle that the Vedas establish as absolute necessity, they want to kick it out. According to the Vedas and according to the Acharyas, that civilization can only take place when they are as the following of Varnashram Dharma according to Shastra. Prabhupada basically said, where there's Varnashram Dharma, that's civilization. Where there's not Varnashram Dharma, it is uncivilized life. And therefore the scriptures of the West are basically scriptures which are unscientific for the Malechas and Yavanas, primarily because they do not deal with the very basic function of how society goes together toward Krishna through Varnashram. And here in this great land, people don't want to talk about the caste system. This is their idea of Varnashram Dharma, the caste system. Taking the most sacred, precious gift that God himself gave to humanity to elevate us all to the spiritual world and just calling it the caste system. Krishna explains in Gita, Chatur Varna Mayastristam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. I created Varnashram system. And it is to be followed by acting according to the quality and the work of a particular Varna and Ashram. And Maharaj Parikshit, his whole kingdom was flourishing. There was no exploitation. Practically everyone was God conscious, because with his sword, he strictly enforced Varnashram Dharma. And therefore everyone was happy. The Shudras were as blissful as the Brahmins. Why? Because the Shudras were not trying to imitate someone that they were not. They had particular qualities, they had particular karmas, and they were protected, and they were performing their work, and they were developing spiritual and material prosperity. Therefore, they didn't want to compete. The Shudras never wanted to imitate Brahmins because they know it was unnatural. Varnashram Dharma is simply the natural system of civilization. And the Brahmins were very happy because they respected the Shudras, they respected the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas. They understood that they were their servants. They were meant to serve by giving direction. According to the Shastra, the human body has different functions, every part. The head serves the whole body. The head does not exploit the body. The head serves the arms, the belly, and the legs by giving intelligent direction. The arms serve the whole body by protecting it. The belly serves the whole body by nourishing it, and the legs serve the whole body by carrying it according to the direction it receives. So nowhere do we find within our body that any part is trying to exploit the other. The head isn't trying to say, I'm better than the arms, and the arms aren't beating the head, and the legs aren't kicking the head and kicking the stomach. But that's what we have today, capitalism, communism, socialism. It's just the legs are trying to kick the belly, kick the arms, and kick the head until it's destroyed, thinking, let the legs prevail as the only part of the body. That's what communism means. It's ignorance. And dictatorship means the arms. Just beat the head till it's a pulp, and beat the belly till it can't function, and beat the legs till it's crippled. Then the arms take over. In capitalism, the belly just wants to eat more and more and more, and just not give anything to anyone else, and let everybody else starve except the belly. This is modern day civilization because they do not understand the principle of Varnashram Dharma, where everyone's a servant. The Brahmins, like the head, are simply serving every part of the body, and every part of the body is happy if the head is giving good direction. The stomach's happy if the head is saying, eat the right food. The legs are happy if the head is saying, go to the right place. And the arms are very happy if the leg is if the head is telling, you know, how to properly conduct its duties. But the problem is when there is no leader who is actually teaching how the Varnashram system is meant to be followed correctly. And here we find that this is how Kali Yuga entered into the world. By destroying the Varnashram system, beginning from the top. By corrupting a Brahmin who was supposed to give good vision to society, by filling his heart with envy and pride. When the Brahmins start thinking they're better than others, that's the end. Brahmins are supposed to be humble servants. Sringi was an inexperienced young boy, but because of Maharaj Parikshit's ruling according to the codes of the Vedas, he had such brahminical powers. If it wasn't for Parikshit Maharaj, he would have no powers. Like the Brahmin children today, they have no powers, they have nothing. They're not even Brahmins, except for very, very rare few. Because Brahman has nothing to do with birth. It has to do with quality and your work. If you are doing the duties of a Brahman with the qualities of a Brahman, you are a Brahman. Otherwise, you're a cheater. So Sringi, he was trained up as a brahmachari by his father, who was a first-class Brahman. Maharaj Parikshit, by the will of Krishna, placed that dead serpent on the shoulder of his father, which was certainly an aparad, but not so bad. But Sringi, due to his false pride, he ruined the world. He was so proud that I am a Brahmin. My father is a Brahmin. We are the best. We are the top. What is this nonsense, low-class Kshatriya? Think he has the right to offend a Brahmin. That false pride in his heart caused him to misuse the brahminical power that his father gave him and Maharaj Parikshit gave him the right to have. And he cursed the king to die. And that was the beginning of the end of Varnashram Dharma within society on a large scale. Kali had nowhere to enter in the whole planet Earth. Maharaj Parikshit was such a king that Kali had to surrender at his lotus feet. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, no hoarding of gold with greed in heart. These things did not exist in his kingdom. So Kali knew, we have to get rid of Maharaj Parikshit. When we get rid of Maharaj Parikshit, there will be no Varnashram anymore. There will be no king protecting it. People will not understand what their prescribed duties are in the service of God. Every section of society. So Kali saw that this boy was a Brahmin and he was proud of being a Brahmin.
this was the weakness that Kali was searching for. He entered through the false pride of a Brahmin. And gradually, Kali took over the planet. Kali became king. He was dressed up as king. He wanted to imitate the king, but in the face of a real king, he could not. But Sringi, this puffed up, unqualified Brahmin, actually gave Kali the power to actually be the king of the earth. And today, who's the king? Kali. He's wearing the crown. And practically every state leader, every government of the world, he is the emperor, the monarch, and they are just the subordinate kings working under his control and direction. Just like when Parikshit Maharaj was king, there were so many kings and so many Maharajas and presidents and prime ministers all over the world, but they all had to work under his laws. They had no right to transgress his laws. So now Kali is king, the emperor of the world. And all the various governments of all the various nations, they are all just various little kings working under the power and the direction of King Kali. How do we know? We can see. Just obvious. What was Kali's most treacherous activity when Maharaj Parikshit caught him? He was beating a cow and beating a bull. Beating the legs of religion. How do you beat the legs of religion? Illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and slaughter of animals. That's exactly what Kali was directly doing. And Maharaj Parikshit stopped him, and he had to surrender to Parikshit. But now, in every country, it's legal to slaughter animals, even in India. India is becoming one of the biggest exporters. What does that mean? That means the leader of this nation are the humble servants of Kali. Abortion and all of these things that promote death of any government that legalizes it is simply doing it under the authority and order of Kali. Gambling made legal. Practically every nation now, there's so much legal gambling. Why? Ordained by the emperor of the world, Kali. And the provincial kings, the local kings, they obey. And intoxication, right across from our temple, there are these permit rooms. Permit. We never hear of these things, permit rooms. That means you're permitted to engage in sinful activities, which destroy your good qualities, which destroy religion. Legally, the government is legalizing alcohol and drugs. Why? Because they have been given the order by the king, Kali. So when Parikshit Maharaj moved out, Kali had no one to fear. He put his crown back on, and here I am. Surrender to me. And that's what's happening. Because where there's no Varnashram Dharma, there's Kali Yuga. To the degree Varnashram Dharma is degenerated, to that degree Kali Yuga is powerful. So we must understand the importance of this Vedic culture based on this principle. And because after Sringi, who was the first corrupt Brahmin in this age, because of his pride of being born a Brahmin, although he did not have the qualities, he misused his position. Gradually, the Brahminical class became proud of being Brahmins because they were born in that family. They were of that gotra. And they didn't even strive or try gradually to understand what is their real duties and roles in society. And they began to exploit rather than serve. Jivera Swarupoi Krishna Nityadas. We are all eternally servants of Krishna. We are eternally servant of the servant of Krishna. We have no other position ever. We are never masters. We are never controllers. We are always servant. This is knowledge. But due to the false ego, the Brahmins wanted to control, that we are better than you. And gradually, when the Brahmins are not learned in the Vedas, self-controlled, simple, humble, clean, serving, then the other castes, the other ashrams and varnas, they go haywire. They have no direction. If the brain goes insane, then you don't know what to eat anymore. Your arms don't know what to beat or hit. Your legs don't know where to go. You have seen insane people. They're dangerous. They put them in hospitals just to protect others. When a person's mind becomes deranged, insane, then what happens? Sometimes they beat people, sometimes they beat themselves, they go eat anything dangerous. Sometimes you have to put them in straitjackets. That's what our society is today. It's like an insane person. It should be put in a straitjacket. The whole social body, no head. The head has gone insane. The Brahmins have become insane with the intoxication of false pride. And therefore, the legs are going crazy, the arms are going crazy, the belly's always got indigestion. Dysentery, so many things. Everybody's suffering because there's no direction, there's no head in society. So sad. And therefore, the people of the world now, the word caste system is like a dirty, filthy word. Nobody even knows the word Varnashram Dharma anymore. If you go to another country and you talk about India, they say, oh, they follow the caste system. Disgusting, ignorant fools, they follow the caste system. And they're right. Because the caste system is just everybody's exploiting one another. And the people of India, the intelligent people, the deprived people, they just talk about the caste system, they say, let's get rid of it. Let's get it out, push it out, flush it down. And let us actually become like the West, casteless. Because the West is basically, everyone, the Varnashram system is natural. There's the educated class, there's the warrior and political class, there's the business class, there's the laborer class. In every society, it's natural. But no one knows what their duties are. Nobody knows how to work together anymore. That's what Varnashram means. Taking natural inclinations that are in every country in the world and systematically training people how to work for the betterment of the world and the betterment of your own spiritual life. But now, all those different categories are just completely uncontrolled. And everybody's trying to be something they're not. When Srila Prabhupada came to the West, and he saw the universities and colleges, he said practically all these young men and women should not be in college. They should be in the fields working. Or they should be doing some trade or some business. What are they doing in college? This is ruining the world. Why?
You're trying to make Sudras and Vaishyas and Kshatriyas into educated Brahmins. But they don't know what to do with their knowledge. They have no qualifications. Better they become educated very, very systematically and deeply in a particular trade that they can use to actually contribute something to the world, rather than just trying to be something they're not, and they never will be, qualitatively. And India is just following that system, running after like what are those animals that run after each other? What are they called? Huh? Sheep is nice, but that's that one animal and little rats, and they all start running toward the ocean. Ah, yes. And then they all just run after one starts running, they all start running, and they all jump in the ocean together and die at evil. That happens on an annual basis in some places. So it's like that. Everyone's just chasing, running. But they don't know where they're going. They're just going right into the ocean of material birth and death. So India's like that. It's running after the people of the West. They have this educational system, we should have this educational system. Everyone become doctor, everyone become BCom, everybody become this, and everyone become engineer. We should just understand what our natural inclination is and become educated according to that natural education. And most education should be agrarian. Most of the societies are Vaishyas and Shudras. They should be learning how to train oxen. And they should be learning how to make nice crafts. And they'll be happy. And they'll be contributing so many wonderful things to the world. And everybody will be happy. And they can be God conscious too, living a simple life. But now everyone technical, everyone engineer, and everyone marketing manager, and everyone learning how to be a computer expert, any science, biological and scientific engineers and doctors and everything else. And what's the result? You just have these massive factories, and people are just working like dogs and sweating and polluting, breathing in cancerous substances. And nobody's happy. Big crowded cities. There's so much wonderful, wonderful land to live on, and they're just building these buildings straight up in these tiny little, in these cities, just to cram somehow in and just to get one of these little holes in one of these massive, massive, high buildings. You have to go up these elevators. If the elevator stops, you're trapped. And someday the elevators will stop. You'll just wait and see. And just to get one of the little holes way up in the sky, you have to pay a fortune. You have to spend your whole life just trying to pay the bills for that. This is modern civilization, because it's completely artificial and off track. Varnashram system, the Brahmins, they're actually, the Brahmins aren't studying what they study at the universities today. They're studying the Shastra. They're studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Ishopanishad. They're studying the Bhagavad Gita. This is a Brahmin. Today, Brahmin means you're born in a Brahmin family and you buy a thread that costs 50 paisa. I'm a Brahmin. I'm better than you. And these kinds of Brahmins, even though Brahmins reading the Vedas, they have to be actually trained in sampradaya, in parampara. Otherwise, the reading of the Vedas will simply be a disturbance to society. Ravana was a Brahmin who studied the Vedas. Hiranyakashipu was a Brahmin who studied the Vedas. Kumbhakarna was a Brahmin. I don't know how much he studied the Vedas. He was sleeping most of the time and eating, but he was a Brahmin. Well, what is the use of such Brahmins? Without parampara of becoming the humble servant of the previous acharyas, then your being a Brahmin is only a disturbance. Your reading the Vedas is a disturbance. This is the problem. So the Brahmins began to exploit. They became cruel. In fact, it says in the Shastra that Rakshasas take birth in Brahmin families just to destroy society. We're not against Brahmins. We love Brahmins. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmani Hitaya Cha. Krishna loves Brahmins, but we have to understand, what is a Brahmin? A Brahmin is someone who's actually acting and living like a Brahmin, not someone who has a birth and then acts like a rascal. That is not Brahmin. In fact, the most dangerous of all Rakshasas are the Brahma Rakshasas. Of course, these days, there's hardly any Brahmins, so therefore there's hardly any Brahmin Rakshasas. Hiranyakashipu was a Brahmin Rakshasa. They're actually Rakshasas, but they have the powers of Brahmins. They're just misusing it. So this unfortunate situation took place where the ritualistic, materialistic Brahmins were serving their egos rather than serving society. And they were actually keeping people away from God rather than bringing everyone toward God. That's how Islam and Christianity grew in India. We respect Islam. It's a bona fide religion. And we respect Christianity. What the Prophet Muhammad and Jesus did for the world is something that we should all be eternally grateful for. According to time, place, and circumstance, they preached religious principles. And ultimately, they preached to people how to develop gradually love for God, for Krishna. But the Christians and the Muslims that came to India, they were coming for a different purpose. They were not coming to enlighten people with love of God. They were coming to subjugate politically people through changing their religion to their religion. That was their motives. The British came and sent their missionaries not to give people love of God. But the more people became Christian, the religion of England, the more people will just naturally always be loyal to the British king or the queen. And as far as Islam, they were not holy religious people. They were violent fanatics. But they were trying to appear to do good to the people. They were opening mosques. They were opening churches. And the Brahmin class was so corrupt, they ruined India's religion. The Brahmins. They were slaughtering animals, saying that this was as good as any other type of religion. They were engaging in illicit activities, and they were depriving the lower varnas from any right to religion, especially Shudras. They categorized that these types of people, because they're born of this family, they are untouchable. That means you cannot even touch them. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would embrace Haridas Thakur, and they're saying, you cannot touch him. If you touch him, you lose your caste. This is how nonsense. The story of Subhuti Rai. Subhuti Rai was a Brahmin, and he was a very, very good devotee of the Lord. But the caste system in India was so corrupt in those days.
He had a an assistant who was a young boy. He treated him like a father to a son. He was so good. But one time the boy did some very, very bad mistake, so he wanted to train him. So he whipped him out of love. Sometimes a father spanks a child out of love to give him some good understanding of his mistake, not to do it again. So later on, that boy grew up and got married, and his wife saw some little whip mark on his body. And of course, when a wife marries a husband, then it's no longer the husband's body. The body of the husband belongs to the wife. This is material consciousness. That your body is mine to enjoy. The husband thinks that I have sole proprietorship over this woman's body for my enjoyment, and the woman thinks that I have sole proprietorship over this man's body for my sexual enjoyment. And this is what marriage means today amongst the materialistic class of people. I now have an exclusive body for sexual enjoyment. It's mine, and it's long. Therefore, we take a vow of chastity, so we both know that we have exclusive proprietorship. Nobody else can disturb. It's mine. Your body is mine. My body is yours. Like that. That's not marriage. The Vedic marriage is we get married, and we become one body to serve God. Your body belongs to God. The husband must understand this woman's body is God's property. I have no right to enjoy it. It's for Krishna's enjoyment. If we have to have sex, it should only be for the satisfaction of Krishna by producing Krishna-conscious children, never for sense gratification. That is the standard in the scriptures, and all the acharyas have protected. And a woman sees the husband the same way. Your body is God's property. It is to be respected. It is to be honored. And the man honors and respects the woman's body. In this way, there's no illicit sensual conditions. That is civilized life. That everything belongs to God and everything must be respected and used in the service of God. We help each other to serve God. But materialistic, not like that. It is for my sense gratification. I like to look at you and enjoy. In Krishna consciousness, we both come together to look at Krishna. We don't just look at each other like this. So, this servant, his wife, was a materialistic woman. This body of yours that I like to look and enjoy, who put these marks on it? Subhuti Rai, he's like my father. I did something wrong. He gave me proper punishment. He has done this. He has interfered with my sense gratification. For the rest of my life, I have to see these little marks. It's my body. And he has done this. He must die. You must kill him. I can't tolerate that someone has done this to my body. This is the mentality. He said, how can I kill him? He's my well-wisher. There has never been anyone so nice like him to me. Now I'm in a big, big position because he gave it to me. He trained me for it. He retired and gave it to me. Whatever I have is given to me by him. How can I kill him? She said, if you want me, he must go. So this is a very difficult situation. When a man is attached to a woman, very difficult. Good luck in your life. Of course, the woman's a very sweet, chaste, nice, humble, submissive devotee, then
Being attached to her is like being attached to Krishna, because she will always help you become Krishna conscious. Such natural attachment is good. But when we become attached to somebody that's materialistic, look at Ajamil. He was a very nice brahmachari. And then he got married to a very nice Krishna conscious lady. And he got attached to a materialistic person. And what terrible things he did due to that attachment. So this person, he couldn't live without his wife. So he had to do something to Subhuti Rai. So he decided that I will kill him without killing him by taking away his caste. So he did something which is such, according to the ritualistic Hindu conception of that day, if you lose your caste, it's worse than death. And how to make a person lose his caste? It wasn't difficult. They took a pot of water that a Muslim drank out of. They didn't believe in interfaith in those days so much amongst the caste Brahmins. And they took that. They just sprinkle a drop of water on you and you're socially dead. Lost his caste. And everybody, the word spread, Subhuti Rai was touched by the water from a Muslim's pot. And they all, he wasn't allowed to do puja. He wasn't allowed to chant the name of God. He wasn't allowed to go into a temple. Nobody would have anything to do with him. He was an outcast. He was an untouchable. This is to the degree the Vedic system became totally degraded. And it was all done by the Brahmins. They made these terrible, crazy rules. Totally materialistic and exploitative. So he wanted again to have some respectability within society so he could practice his religion. So he went to various people. He went to Brahmins. He went to one Brahmin and said, is there any atonement, any yajna, anything I could do in my life to again become accepted within the Hindu culture? Brahmin asked, what happened? How did you lose your caste? Someone put a drop of water on me from a Muslim's pot. The Brahmin said, there's nothing I can do for you. You're finished. You're an outcast for the rest of your life. That's what everyone was telling him. Finally, a glimmer of hope came into his life when one Brahmin told him that there is something you can do. You get ghee, and you just put it on fire until it's smoking hot, and then you drink it all. But if I do this, I will die. Yes, you will die. But because ghee is pure, and it's coming from the cow, because you die with ghee in your system, you will take your next birth as a Hindu. That's the best I can tell you under these very difficult circumstances. So he was thinking, maybe I can find some other way. So he approached Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told him that you do two things. You serve the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord, and you constantly chant the holy names of Krishna. By this process, you will be not only the best of the Brahmins, but you will go above the whole Varnashram system and you will become a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is respected and worshipped by all classes of society. So Subhuti Rai became a Gaudiya Vaishnava. And under Lord Chaitanya's instruction, he went to Vrindavan and he became menial servant of all the devotees. What he would do is he would go out into the forests and collect wood. And then he would sell that wood and make little money, whatever the currency was in those days. Or he would barter. And in this way, he would buy dahi and oil. And the devotee, and rice, chawal. And when the devotees from Bengal, who were associates of Lord Chaitanya, would come to Vrindavan, usually they had indigestion, because Bengalis eat rice, and in UP they eat roti. And for people who eat rice, rotis cause indigestion too much. So just because he wanted to serve the Vaishnavas nicely, he would give them dahi in order to heal their indigestion. And then he would cook for them nice rice, and they would be very happy. And he would also get oil and massage their bodies, because Prabhupada said Bengalis like to be massaged. So he would massage their bodies. And he would take them on parikrama of all the 12 forests of Vrindavan. And the whole while, whether he was collecting wood or purchasing dahi and rice or massaging people's bodies or taking people on parikrama, whatever he was doing, he was constantly chanting Krishna's holy names. And in this way, he completely transcended all the barriers of these ridiculous social conventions. And he became a pure Vaishnava. He became most dear to the Supreme Personality of God and all of his associates. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. And Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very, very intensely and aggressively fought against this misconception of the perverted caste system. But not like the downtrodden, he saw, it was there. Those people who were the Shudras, most of them converted, not most of them, but many of them, by the millions, they converted to another religion just because they were tired of being spat upon and exploited and defamed by the Brahmins. They were allowed to go into the mosque, they were allowed to go into the church and worship, because these religions have no caste. They have no varna or ashram. Everyone's one. Which is a defect from the higher point of view, because there isn't the scientific categorical understanding of how everyone can work together for the ultimate purpose of life. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his descendants have very, very strongly fought against this perverted caste system. But different than the people of the materialistic society who are trying to fight against the caste system. The people of the materialistic society of India today who are fighting against the caste system, they want to just abolish it and make it a classless society. But the Vaishnavas, they are trying to rule out, defeat, and conquer the perverted materialistic conception of caste by birth and exploitation to establish true Varnashram Dharma.
as Krishna originally intended it to be, where everyone could live happy and naturally, not artificially competing to be something that you're not just because of social pressure. Simple living, high thinking, in devotion to God. Where everyone, whether we are Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas, or Sannyasis, we respect each other for our renunciation, we respect each other for our knowledge of the goal of life, and for our devotion, and for our willingness to properly follow our occupation in this mood. In this way, all the four varnas and all the four ashrams progress back home to Godhead together, because they are all taking prasad together, dancing together, and chanting Krishna's holy names together. Is there any questions?
This Indian caste system, which is prevailing, I was very much disturbed in the beginning days. What they used to argue about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, you people consider him as a personality of Godhead, supreme personality of Godhead, yet he too was following the caste system, and they used to give the example of Haridas Thakur. They used to say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was following this caste system, and that was the reason why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't allow Haridas Thakur to visit Jagannath Puri temple. And when he is following this caste
system... Before you go on, who says this?
Well, this was the group of all those people who were reciting Bhagavad Saptas and everything, and they
said that Lord Chaitanya did not allow Haridas Thakur. That is bogus nonsense. They don't know anything about Lord Chaitanya. Better they keep their mouths shut than speak nonsense. Lord Chaitanya never did not allow Haridas Thakur into the Jagannath temple. Haridas Thakur, out of his humility, out of his own sheer, pure, unalloyed humility, he did not want to go into the Jagannath temple. He refused to go into the Jagannath temple for two reasons. One is he felt himself unqualified, and two is he understood that the Brahminical culture, there was certain social ideas, and he did not want to disrupt that just for himself to go before Jagannath. Lord Chaitanya would have been very happy if he wanted to go in, but Lord Chaitanya respected and honored his humility. And out of love for Haridas, Lord Chaitanya personally gave him a place right next to the Jagannath temple, Siddha Bakula. He gave him a bhajan kutir right under the chakra of the Jagannath temple, because the chakra is none different than the deity. So Haridas could be chanting his 3 lakhs of names of the Lord every day, right directly in the presence of Jagannath, who appears within the chakra on the top of the temple. It was Haridas Thakur's own feeling and desire. And Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis also would never go into the Jagannath temple, because they did not want to disturb the social conventions of the time. And also they felt very humble and unqualified to go in. Lord Chaitanya never prevented them, but he honored their humility. And that is the fact. And if you study all the histories and biographies of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all of his followers, we will never find any incident or any reference that Lord Chaitanya did not allow them to come in. It was the caste Brahmins of the time. Although they were actually very good Brahmins, still there were certain elements of social... Because people... and. Lord Chaitanya did not disrupt that.
and his devotees did not want to disrupt that within the temple. But Lord Chaitanya totally disrupted the conception, because he personally made Haridas Thakur the Namacharya, the highest position in creation. That is the evidence that Lord Chaitanya accepted the Varnashram in its spiritual sense. The age of Kali, the Yuga Dharma, is the chanting of the holy names. Whoever is the acharya of the chanting of the holy names has the highest position in religion. He gave that to Haridas Thakur, born in a Muslim family. According to the Vedic system, they're untouchable. But when Haridas died, Lord Chaitanya held his body, he embraced it, and he danced in ecstasy with it. You're only supposed to perform your last rites to someone who is like your father. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally bathed the body of Haridas and personally performed the last rites and buried it with his own hands. He worshipped Haridas Thakur. He never prevented him, but he honored his complete humility. Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki, Namacharya Shri Haridas Thakur ki. Thank you very much.